Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America.
Right.
But when did America ever bless God?
Right. Right.
You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America
right
at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You some bitches get out, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power, black power and more. Black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arms and comrade in battle. This is Sean Kwali. I feel good and I'm happy to be able to broadcast live with you right here behind enemy lines from the hails and the smells of North America. And each week that we invite you to this radio show, you know that we got a few things on our mind. But in specific, we are always coming live talking about black power, black nationalism, black ideology for black people, black liberation, freedom of death, and it's no holds barred. We open up each and every one of our shows not being ungrateful, but showing gratitude and giving thanks and being grateful for those of our lineage, those that are in our heritage, those that are in our genealogy, those who have had our backs and took care of us, and those who have made ways for us in some cases even before we were born, have to give thanks to our ancestors, those that are in your personal family, and those that are in your extended family across the globe. Of the total 196,940,000 square miles of the planet Earth, we are thankful for anyone who has raised the banner, the bloody stained banner of liberation, and who, through trial and tribulation, has fought hard to make our people's legacy known and to have dignity in the world, in a savage world where we have been stripped of our names, our language, our culture, our folkways, our foreways, and robbed of the very power of our own being. On this Black Power Radio, we give thanks for Toussaint Louverture. We give thanks for Buchmann. We give thanks for Dessalines. We give thanks for Bishop Henry McNeil Turner. We give thanks for the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. We give thanks for Dr. Booker T. Washington. We give thanks for Martin Delaney. We give thanks for Queen Tyr. We give thanks for Queen Sheba and Queen Nefertiti. We give thanks for Yah Asantewaa. We give thanks for all of our elders, our sages and our counselors, and those who have preserved a measure of black knowledge and black wisdom so that we can have some markers and some reminders that we were not always slaves and that we were not always in a lowly condition and that we were not always robbed of self-knowledge and devoid of a knowledge of self. But we give thanks for those who have preserved wisdom, and that wisdom has traveled down the wheels of time within our families. And so ever since we were forcibly, as a people, brought to the hells and smells of and the shores of North America, ever since we were forced here, it has been one hell of a ride. It has been one hell of a journey and one hell of an uphill struggle. And so there are plenty on this soil who have fought and took lives and gave lives. But we have to pay special attention to a regimen that came up throughout the South and served as an example of what men, what strong men, and also strong women, what you and I should do in the face of opposition. We have to pay special attention and give thanks for the deacons of defense. For were it not for the deacons of defense, you would not and we would not later on down the road have the example of Kwame Ture, later Stokely, formerly Stokely Carmichael, and the Lowndes County, Alabama Freedom Party, or the Black Panther Party of Lowndes County, Alabama. You wouldn't have that there with him and Bob Brown and Baba Mukasa Ricks. You wouldn't have that and what popped up in New York City with Queen Mother Moore and the others. You wouldn't have that in which popped up in 1966 in Oakland, California, nor in 65 with the Northern California branch of the Black Panther Party out there in San Francisco, believe it was. You would have none of that, and we would have none of that. And so we give special thanks for our family, the Deacons of Defense, and also every single solitary regimen of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And in this hour, we, on this show, give a mighty mega salute to that seed that was planted in 1989. Over 20 years ago, we're thankful for a seed that was planted as a bold warrior was transitioning and making his transition into the land of the Egun, as our ancestors say. Talking about Huey P. Newton in 1989, leaving this existence, but also leaving some cubs in the bush and leaving a spirit in the world that was never destroyed. And so in 1989, you come across a man named Aaron Michaels. You come across a man named David Foreman. You come across some others who organized out of Dallas, Texas. You also, in that same breath, have to, in the 1990s, give a thanks for a strong warrior and a strong soldier who, in that same era of time, produced the Black Panther Militia in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A brother by the name of Brother Michael McGee, comrade and commandant Michael McGee, with the Black Panther militia. And so we are thankful and have a lot to be thankful for, because since that time now, the flag was passed on. The mission was passed on. The goal of liberation was still in reach and still in sight. And so there was a bold warrior who took over the mission, who stood up and said he wanted to be the chairman, who was voted in as the chairman by the new Black Panther Party. Coming in 1998, we're really working with the party before then, but officially being chairman in 1998, he stood up long before then and made his commission known to the world that his purpose on this planet was to give our open 400-year-old oppressor hail from the cradle to the grave. This man has earned the title and the legacy of the Black Power General, and his lessons and his wisdom, his guidance, his spirit, his instruction, it still emanates from the party today. I'm talking about a bold scholar and a bold warrior and a comrade that stood up for us when nobody else would stand for us and would say the things to our enemies that nobody else would say and would physically fight on our behalf when others would not stand up to fight. I'm talking about our Black Power General, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. The Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. And so, he being a wise warrior, knowing that we are all in a flesh and blood body, and knowing that even though matter is neither created nor destroyed, that our flesh and blood bodies will not last eternally on this planet, he was constantly preparing students, constantly preparing individuals, male and female, for leadership and guiding us into leadership. And so there was a heavy burden that was placed upon a special student, a heavy burden, the burden of the liberation and salvation of the Black nation, and the burden of carrying the mission, carrying on the mission as laid on his shoulders by the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. And so this brother now serves as our national chairman after being in several capacities in the new Black Panther Party and also organizing on his college campus as a student activist and student warrior, building Unity Nation at that time. He himself has gone on to have his jurisprudence and become an attorney at law, but we call him the attorney at war. Because many attorneys today, they are taught to be sissified. They are taught to be punctified. They are taught to be gentle. They are taught not to offend anyone. They are taught to just recite and give out some law license, give out some freedom for some money. But this black man connected to the struggle at an early age. This black man cares about his people. He is not the type of attorney that can just collect monies and then watch his people suffer in the dirt. He's not the type of black man that can just go to the job and do his daily job and then go home and put his feet up and just watch the television channel. This black man is a brother and a soldier and a warrior who has committed his total existence to the liberation struggle of the black nation. And so we honor him and give thanks for his spirit and his zeal and his commitment. And he is a man who has undergone much trial and has undertaken much pressure and is dealing with much weight, but he handles it all with a smile. I'm talking about our comrade and our big brother and freedom fighter and champion and national chairman of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. That brother's name is Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. We have to get familiar with all of these names for you new ones. You're going to have to get to know your ancestors' names and those who are fighting for you in a modern context. And my name is Sean Kwali. I'm the national spokesman for the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, and I'm here to tell you we're going to get down tonight, brother and sister. And even to the enemy that's listening, we're going to get down tonight. It's going to be rough, rugged, and raw tonight. You better call somebody on three-way. You better Twitter and email and Facebook status this Black Power Radio. Go down to the bottom of the screen and click like and share right now. Because by the time you look up, it's going to be so hot, you're going to have to fan your phones. You're going to have to fan your computers. You're going to have to fan your radios. We're taking no holds barred. That's the theme. It's no holds barred. We have been loosed to go buck wild on America in the name of the black nation to liberate our people. And so there's no more holding back. There's no more waiting around and being attacked and not answering back. There's no more not organizing in a proper fashion and watching our people steadily decline. We are willing to take the ball and willing to take our position as a party in this country and in this world that stands on the firm principles of black power, black theology, and black liberation. No one wants to have an all-black program anymore. No one wants to deal with the specific needs of a people who have suffered for 400 years. No one wants to deal with the sons and the daughters of Africa who were once world rulers but are now relegated to being placed in the position of what's a so-called second-class citizenship or the position of a project dweller. No one wants to deal with that. No one wants to handle the awesome task of wrestling away the white supremacist ideology that rules the minds of our people and institutions. No one wants to destroy the idols that have been put up in our heads and have served as gods over our lives, that have been false teachers and preachers in our lives. No one wants to establish land, a land of our own, so that we don't have to go begging white folks and begging other people and other nationalities for that which we can unite and get for ourselves. And so we are the last ones standing, really the last ones standing with the sprinkle of a few dedicated. But as a party, as a revolutionary party, you don't have SNCC anymore. You don't have CORE anymore. You don't have RAM anymore. You don't have organizations like you saw in the 60s and the 70s that were dedicated to the upliftment and the movement of black people. It's 2011, and Negroes have given up talking about we got a black president, and because we have a black president, there's no need to struggle anymore. Damn it, the president himself is struggling, wrestling with these white hypocrites and black Negroes that are in high offices of government. So you, the regular man and regular woman on the streets, you know you struggling. These are millionaires. The arguments that the presidents have and that the Congress have, these are million-dollar arguments. They're not arguing over you. They're arguing over their dollars. They're arguing over who's going to control what part of the country, who's going to control what other country. They're having business meetings. But as they have their business meetings and have their corporate meetings, the condition of our community not only gets worse, but it is steadily declining on a daily and consistent basis. And so since we live here, and there is no magic hand that's going to come out the sky and free us from this condition, since there is no puff of smoke that's going to come out the sky or from underneath the ground and going to save us from our oppressor, since no other country or nationality in history has ever been liberated by some imaginary dream or by some immaterial object, brothers and sisters, that means that we are going to have to organize and fight and come together and unify on the basis of common struggle. I know what I'm saying. We're going to have to unify, no matter how much you don't want to, no matter how much you want to remain separated, no matter how much you want to stay in your own little pocket. The black man and black woman, the indigenous African and woman, the original people, we're going to have to pull ourselves together. And those that don't or refuse to pull themselves together in the name of our people, then you align yourself with the enemy. And it's clear what must happen. And so tonight on Black Power Radio, we want to answer your questions. We've been getting a lot of questions. The email has been blowing up and overflowing with question after question and inquiry after inquiry. Our phone lines blowing up with inquiry after inquiry, answer machine after answer machine, wanting to know what is the position of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. How do I join the new Black Panther Party for self-defense? What is it that you all do on a day-to-day basis in the communities and in the ghettos, the so-called ghettos, where you live at and where most live at every day of your lives? We want to answer your questions tonight. We want to answer the question of if we are a bunch of raving, stark, mad, raging lunatics running around acting radical and with no common sense in our heads. We want to answer your question, are we an illegitimate party as it concerns the Black Panther Party of the 1960s? Did we just take the name and start manufacturing a party and using the name for ourselves, or do we have some base? We want to answer your questions, are we anti-Semitic? We want to answer your questions, are we racist, and do we preach hatred and racism towards white people and Caucasian people? We want to answer your question, what is the mission and what is the goal of Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz? What is the mission and the goal of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad? We're going to answer all of these questions and much, much more tonight, brother and sister. But it is important in us answering the question that you understand what our position is, what our program is, what it is that we represent, what it is that is our base, what it is that keeps us functioning on a day-to-day basis. And so as we deal with these questions, and I'm saying you can ask me whatever. You can ask me whatever. We're not hiding behind no rock. This is on the air live to be immortalized on tape. Not hiding behind no curtain somewhere, hiding behind some podium somewhere, hiding behind some pulpit somewhere. Damn it, we are revolutionaries. We are soldiers out here. And for the most part, we just ignore most of you crazy ones out there that believe the propaganda of our enemies. We just ignore you. For the most part, you rarely ever even hear us address you and the lies that you tell on our party. We just keep working. We just keep moving. We just keep grooving and doing what we normally would do anyway. But that time has come that we must now begin to make war with this beast, the beast in ourselves and the beast outside of ourselves, on an intellectual level, on an informational level, on a spiritual level, and when it comes down to it, on a physical level. We must begin now, because our people are not getting free, the conditions of the people are not changing, and it is not helping the situation, dressing everything up and trying to make everything pretty and trying to go along to get along, when most of you cowards ain't even friends of ours anyway. If you haven't stood with us, or you're not standing with us, or you don't appreciate what we're doing, you're not a friend of ours anyway. You're not a comrade of ours anyway. So we have nothing to lose in crushing your weak behind. We come in the spirit of the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, who took no prisoners, who cut no corners, who taught us that somebody has to be strong, that everybody can't capitulate, everybody can't kowtow, everybody can't use fancy words and dress it up for you to make you feel good, and when you leave, you go right back to sleep and you do nothing for your own freedom and liberation. We're going to come right at you on Black Power Radio, and we're going to come right at you with our program, a program that was broadcast to the world by Minister Malcolm X, broadcast to the world by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, broadcast to the world by the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, a program of black nationalism. Which means that you must, black people, do for yourself. You must begin to control your own communities. And if our communities are out of control, it is because the nationalists and those who really need power don't have power. Those who desire power don't have power. The power of the community, if it's out of control, it is in the hands of your enemies. And in some cases, even your black enemies. Those who have become black capitalists or black bloodsuckers, black vampires, who are following the ways of the white man and white people and the colonizer. And so we're going to answer all of these questions tonight. And I will begin. I'll go right to the phone lines. We got. Let me first give out the number here. For those of you that are listening by phone, via phone, and you can't see the number, you call this number 646-478-4447. I'm going to give it one more time. It's 646-478-4447. You get on there, you press number 1. And the people that are behind the switchboards will know that you're there to call. We can put you right on in. Those of you that are in the chat rooms, you put your question in the chat room, we'll answer your call from the chat room. Or you can go to my personal Facebook page. I'm going to give you my personal Facebook page. It's Sean Kweli, Kweli. You put that in there. Leave me a message in my inbox or drop something on the front of my page. We're going to answer all of that. We got enough time to dig deep so that you who are listening, who may be confused about the new Black Panther Party, that you will have a good understanding, if not a great understanding, of what it is that we stand for, who it is that we are, and what our true mission is in the world. And so I will go right to the phone line now and take this first call, then we'll answer some of these emailed questions, and we're going to get right on into it. 447-903. Your mic is live. You're on the air with the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Your question, please. 447-903. Go right ahead with your question.
Black power.
Black power.
Hotep.
Hotep.
Big up the most honorable Marcus Mazaya Garvey on his Earth Strong, the 17th of, we call this month, we don't call it August, we call it the month of Messiah.
That's
and
right.
As you know, that the Honorable Marcus Mazaya Garvey started the Universal Negro Improvement Association back in 1913/14, and was a giant within the world, and built up an organization without Facebook, without Twitter, without fax, without phone, to the tune of 6 million members coming out of St. Anne's, the parish St. Anne's in Jamaica, West Indies. So we want to hail him for his Earth Strong, and we want to rise up all of the Pan-Africanists and all of the Garveyites throughout the world. Black power.
Black power.
My name is Chairman Huey Rose, the international ambassador of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And good to hear your voice, Brother Sean.
Good to hear yours, sir. Black power.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's never been any better. Today I've come to talk to you really about the death of our brother Mark Duggan. I'm not too sure if you've been following the news, but there has been a serious uprising within the United Kingdom. And
yes,
the uprising started 15 minutes from where I reside, here
wow.
in the belly of the beast.
Talk to us about it.
If I just go back to, first and foremost, I want to extend my condolences to the family of Mark Duggan. It wouldn't be good of me to come here and don't extend my condolences to his family that are here and abroad. Mark Duggan is a young man, a father of four, who was traveling in a minicab last Thursday afternoon in broad daylight. He was being followed by the feds that stopped the minicab, dragged him and the cab driver out of the cab, put them face down on the ground, and then shot twice into the back and also the arm of Mark Duggan, execution style. And this was done in broad daylight within an area of London called Tottenham. Mm. As a result of this, the family was never told that Mark was in the hospital. His partner, his girlfriend, was notified about it, not by the police, not by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, not by the hospital, but she happened to turn on the TV and realize they had assassinated her boyfriend. And immediately she rushed to a hospital to then be told that she could not see the body of Mark Duggan. Subsequently, she met with family members and friends, and they were trying to get answers, could not get any answers. So they decided to march down to the police station on the Saturday. So on the Saturday, a couple hundred friends and family marched down to the police station to demand answers as to why Mark Duggan was executed. And they requested to an audience with a senior officer who was not willing to speak with the family. They were told that there was not a senior officer about that could come to speak to them. They waited outside the police station for 5 hours until a gentleman by the name of Ken Hines got through to the chief superintendent, who then came outside to speak with the family. By this time, the family had been very agitated and very upset that it's taken 5 hours for a senior person to come out. During this time, several officers assaulted a 16-year-old female, and this in the UK is unacceptable. And that is when the uprising started. You put your hand on the black woman in the UK, you pay a price for it.
That's right.
And you should pay a price for it anywhere in the world, but in the UK in particular, you do that, you're just as good to be sent to the cemetery. So the uprising took place, and the police stood back. They didn't want to interfere, and the uprising started from Tottenham, went down to Hackney, went down from Hackney down to Tottenham, sorry, not to Tottenham, to Peckham. From Peckham, it went to Brixton. From Brixton, these are different boroughs within London.
Mm-hmm.
So it went to 13 boroughs throughout London. Then it left London, and then the uprising continued straight up to Bristol. Then it went to Birmingham. Then it went to Wolverhampton. Then it went to Nottingham. From Nottingham, it went to all the way up to Manchester. And then it changed from being the black brothers and sisters doing the uprising. The whites then continued it from that point, from Birmingham up to Manchester. And the whites wrecked Manchester totally. And so what has happened is that the government was then didn't know what to do, because the police were outnumbered. They had been actually depleted of resources, and the youth brought them to their knees. And the mayor was on holiday and was reluctant to come back. And he waited for a little while. Then they told him it was very serious. He then came back. The prime minister was on holiday, Ian Cameron. He was reluctant to come back, but they told him, it's getting out of hand, boss. We don't know what we're going to do, boss. The police are petrified. And they were telling them to go and get some water cannons, get the army out on the streets until I get back. And the police were reluctant to bring the army out. And so Cameron came back, the mayor, Boris Johnson, came back. Then all of a sudden, they realized that they needed to trump up some more police forces. So they normally have between 3,000 to 6,000 police officers on the ground in London, and they had to deploy 16,000 officers to secure London. By that time, the damage had already been done.
Exactly.
And so London Bridge has been falling down.
That's
London
right.
London has been on fire. There used to be a tune we used to sing at school called London Bridge is Falling Down, Falling Down, Falling Down. London Bridge is Falling Down, My Fair Lady. And so this week, London Bridge has fallen down and London is on fire, but you have not got the true facts out there in America. You've got some of the details, but not all of the details. This is what the media started out with. First and foremost, the media said on their first account when Mark was assassinated, they said, oh, by the way, there was a interaction of guns and the police were firing back from somebody that was shooting them. Obviously, this was a lie because Mark never had a gun. And so to counteract the lie, they passed over the case to the Independent Police Complaints Commission, which is the equivalent of the police investigating the police. And so they then was told, well, who shot the other gun? And up to now, we can't get the other gun because apparently the police's story was that one of the bullets lodged in a policeman's radio. But we come to find out that it was the shell off one of the bullets that he shot into Brother Mark that ricocheted off and went into his radio. So he then tried to say that the shell came from somebody that was firing at him. So we nullified that argument. And found out after a ballistics test that the two shots that were fired came from the gun of the policeman. Then they said that there was another gun, and it was not a police-issued gun, but it was a unregistered gun. The media then tried to say that that gun belonged to Mark. Up to now, we've not been able to get any forensic evidence to prove that it was Mark's. And so the IPCC then changed their stance and gave the correct information to the media, who then had to backtrack and say that the IPCC have now found out that they cannot confirm where the other gun came from, and they do confirm that the shots came from a police-issued gun. Then they started to go into the character of this brother and said that he was so-called around gangs and gangsterism, but there's no evidence of this. What they're trying to do is cover their tracks for their wickedness. And all the family asked for was just for an explanation as to what was going on. And if they had given that explanation, none of this would have occurred. But the government wants to skirt the issue. The government are now saying that these are criminals. These are thugs. This is a sick society because certain individuals started to do looting and did opportunist actions, and the government have been condemning the youth. But as a representative of the new Black Panther Party, I cannot publicly condemn the youth. I have to commend their spirit of uprising. It's not my job to condemn them. It's my job to uplift them and guide them.
That's
right. Any criticism I have of the youth, that is done behind closed doors, but never in the public eye. Mm-hmm. So on several occasions, media try to stick microphones under me for me to condemn the youth. And because I won't condemn them, they won't take my statement. And so the white folk now are upset very upset, highly upset, even though it's being proven now that it was not just black people that was involved. It was whites, it was Asians, it was Eastern European, it was young, it was middle age, it was the elderly. Everybody took an opportunity to do what they could do. And so I then went on to a radio station to then tell the people that I phoned down to Benghazi, Libya, to ask how was Benghazi started. Got to find out that Benghazi started as a result of a popular activist being arrested by the Libyan authorities. And those people started to riot. They started to throw petrol bombs. They started to burn and loot cars. They started to cause mayhem. And while the Libyan police were trying to bring law and order, the looters and the rioters and the rebels were shooting at the police. And the UK government did not respect the fact that the police in Libya should bring law and order to the streets of Benghazi. And so the UK government gave them arms. The UK government gave them money. And also, on top of that, put up a no-fly zone. And so we see the hypocrisy and the double standards of this government. But when it is visited on them, they wanted to come down hard on Twitter and say that social networking stuff should be stopped and should be blocked, and BlackBerry, BB should be blocked. But we said that, did you not just authorize the killing of a head of state in Libya? Did you not just support rioters? Did you not just support people throwing petrol bombs? And now you're going to moralize on the young black man and woman? And so they've been doing indiscriminate acts where they're now going into people's homes without no warrant, dragging people out, putting them in jail, not giving them any bail, not giving them surety, not giving them no bond to come out. They're putting them in jail and quickly bringing them before the judge, sentencing them and sending them down. There's been over 3,000 arrests. And all of they've been doing is been violating people's civil rights and their human rights. And they're finding now a way to criminalize our young people without them even getting a chance. One girl was sentenced to 6 months for picking up a bottle of water. Another person was sentenced to 6 months for picking up two pairs of trainers. Two people, two Caucasians, two white people, were sentenced to 4 years for inciting something on Facebook. They just wrote something on Facebook, and the government said that's grounds to charge you for inciting, and sentenced them to 4 years. And so they're coming down hard, but they're doing it as a knee-jerk reaction, because what they're doing is going to legally get them into loads of trouble. And so the times are very difficult out here right now, my brothers and sisters. And we, in the new Black Panther Party, we're putting together a defense campaign so that we can make sure our brothers and sisters are represented properly, and that they are not criminalized. And we need to make sure that these things get addressed. They have totally now forgotten about the fact that Mark Duggan was murdered in broad daylight, but now they're focusing on the the shops that were burnt down, the homes that people lost, the social class, the different type of social problems, and there's no mention of suspension of the police officer. We haven't even been able to get the police officer's name, who fired the shots. There's no talk of charging the police officers. And by the way, 2,000 people in this country over the last 10 years have been killed as a result of deaths in custody or interaction with the British police force. So when some of you think that England gives democracy to people and England is a democratic country, you are so far from the truth. England does not give democracy to black people. Black people are third-class citizens here in London, and they do not have the same rights as their white counterparts. We are 25 times more likely to be stopped and searched than our white counterparts. We are 3 times more likely to go to jail than our white counterparts. And there's a disparity in the sentencing and the sentencing guidelines for young black people. And so my message to the British government and my message to those in law enforcement is that you can preach law and order as much as you like, but with law and order, there must come justice. And without justice, you will not seek peace. And so the demand for justice is high on our agenda. Next year is an election year, and there's going to be a case in England that is going to be the ballot or the bullet. One of those two things is going to have to move these people out. The ballot or the bullet will be the theme of 2012. They expect to have an Olympics here in London next year, and they're gearing up to that, but they don't know what they're going to do if they do not satisfy the demands of the people here in the UK. We will upset and overturn their Olympic stadium and the Olympic championships if they do not give us justice here in the UK. And so my message to the UK government and to the governments that oppress our people across the world, you only have a matter of time, because there's a different set of youth coming up today, and they won't take the foolishness that have been taken before and the liberties that have been taken before. And the uprising was right and correct. And every time that they play with the black woman in this country, there has always been an uprising. The last one being in 1985, again in Tottenham, when they ran in on a sister called Cynthia Jarrett, looking for her son. And the sister was so frightened she had a heart attack. And when that uprising took place, they chopped the head off a police officer named PC Blakelock. As a result of that uprising, an officer had his head chopped off in London. Up to this day, nobody has been found for that crime, or for that uprising, or for that defense of our community. The uprising before that was 1981 in Brixton. Again, they rushed in, kicked down the door of another black elder, a mother and a grandmother, and looking again for her son, came in armed and shot her. Didn't kill her, but paralyzed her. Again, uprising took place in Brixton, England. And so, until the UK authorities get the message that if you keep disrespecting the black woman, the brothers here will rise on you, and you would be wise to leave us alone. Or what will happen is what my father taught me, that the only way that you will ever learn is that caskets has got to roll through the police community like it rolls through the black community. Because the only language that the Caucasian, that the white man understands, is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a limb for a limb, and a goddamn life for a life. That's the only language he understands. And as long as you understand that that's the only language he understands, that is the language that you have to serve him. And that is the language that has been consistent with most uprisings from the plantation, from our brother there, Bishop Nat Turner, all the way up to Toussaint L'Ouverture and Dessalines in Haiti, up to the plantations of Jamaica, Nanny of the Maroons, and those brothers and sisters. This is the language that they understand, and this is the language that has always freed our people. And so, as I close, because I know you must have plenty of people on the line that want to get through, I don't want to be too long, but I do want to be strong. And I wanted to say in closing that we need to formulate a worldwide movement. So if they touch one, they touch all. And so the brothers and sisters feel your pain in the United States of America. And every time something happens to you, we want to be able to formulate strategies and formulate a connection, just like how Cuba has formulated a solidarity movement where they cannot come out on Cuba because Cuba has got that support and solid foundation around the world. Again, I want to rise up all of our Garveyites. I want to rise up the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. I want to rise up the leadership of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. And I want to rise up all of the strong soldiers and sisters in the UK that have been struggling and that have been involved in the uprising. And I want you to keep your spirits intact because your day of redemption is coming very soon. Black power, black power. Black power.
Black power. Black power. Brother Huey, man, listen, we appreciate you, brother. We had to give you some time to stretch out. You all the way over there in the UK. But thank you for giving the international report and letting us know exactly what's happening. I was happy to hear that it was our own people that kicked it off and wreaked havoc and wrecked shop, and as you said, crashed London Bridge. I was happy to hear that. And so keep us posted, brother. Hopefully, like I said, we're putting together now the new Black Panther newspaper. Hopefully you can submit something on that so we can get that all across the country and out to the people, brother.
Yes, sir. That will be ready for you anytime you need it.
All right. Well, you know how we do. We're gonna trade some emails and get it in. And so we're gonna say as you say,
give me
a deadline to you. Huh?
Just give me the deadline, it'll be there.
Okay, my brother. All right, we got you coming. We already en route to you. And so we'll say adieu to you, but you can definitely hang on the line. You know, the topic tonight, brother, we're doing a Q&A, question and answer on the new Black Panther Party. Of course, we want to go no holds barred, open this thing up.
What I'll do, I'll free up the line and I'll listen online.
Okay, brother. All right, Black Power to you, Huey.
Black Power.
All right, dear family, you've been served. That's our international representative, Brother Huey Rose. Brother Huey Rose, there in the UK, the United Kingdom. And so we're happy to hear his report and happy to know that when they brutalized and assassinated our brother over there, that they didn't respond the way that some of us respond over here, but that they tore that thing down. I'm talking about black people, Africans, indigenous people, tore that thing up, and it's still tearing that thing up. And so we're right now at the top of the hour, family, and again, we're honored to have you with us. And we are here tonight, family, to answer your questions and answer the questions of the world. This ain't going to be no Rudy Poot session where we, you know, they ask you the little soft questions or the nice questions, and you know, you get the little bunch, and nah, we're going hard. I want you to ask the questions of questions. Ask whatever. As our national chairman say, ask the questions that you think going to put us in the hot seat, because we have to get this out here. We have to begin to beat back the propaganda. Not that it's phasing us or that it's affecting us, but we owe our people an alternative to the lies that you have told on their Revolutionary Party and our mission and our self-determination. We owe our people, we owe our ancestors, we owe our nation a correct answer to these lies and this whitewashing that you've done to our history. We owe our people that. We owe our people that. And so we're going to begin now scientifically to dismantle this white machinery. We're going to dismantle the machinery of the Anti-Defamation League. We're going to dismantle the machinery of the JDL, the Jewish Defense League. We're going to dismantle the machinery called the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SINNERS. We're going to dismantle the machinery of CNN, known as CNN. We're going to dismantle the machinery of Fox News. We're going to dismantle all of them. And we're going to show you, as it was taught to us, as it was given to us from the Black Power General, as given to him by Minister Farrakhan, given to him by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that you got to put the clean glass against the dirty glass. And I challenge any of you cowards out there, any of you out there with your organizations that are kicking that white supremacy, or you're in bed with the white man, fronting like a black organization, put your glass up against this glass coming up called the New Black Panther Party. Put your glass up and let's see which one the people will drink from. It's not a competition, but it is a war for the minds and hearts of our people. And we refuse now that we have our adult legs underneath us, and now that we are no longer carrying the title of an adolescent party, we now refuse to take a back seat or a sidebar seat or a backstage pass to most of you. The New Black Panther Party has a legacy that demands that we be the vanguard of the revolution. That means that we go in head first and we go in head on against the oppressor. And so that's the direction that Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz is taken us and has been taking us, and that's the direction that we're going in. And so again, for those of you that just joined us, you press number one so that the controllers of the switchboard know that you're in queue and ask your questions, and we're going to get right off into it right now. I'm not going to even waste any more time. We got a bunch of questions that was emailed in since our last show on Monday, the first session that we did. But we're gonna go hard at them. The first question that the people want to know is: are we a traitor? Is the New Black Panther Party a traitor to the United States of America. Okay? Are we a traitor? Are we traitors to the United States of America? I would answer the question just like this. I would say that, in truth, the United Snakes of America has betrayed the interest of black people. I say 100% that the United States government in general, the United States Senate, the Congress, the President, the Defense Secretary, and all the cabinets, and even on down to the damn janitor there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that all of them have failed black people. President Barack Hussein, no drama, Obama, has failed black people. The United States government before him and every president before him has failed black people. It was us here in the United States of America that were called three-fifths of a human being. You would say that all men are created equal, but then you would leave a clause and say that we, the sons and daughters of Africa, were only three-fifths of a human being. So you weren't talking to us, and you weren't referring to us. And while they were drafting that piece in the document, you wanted us to be somewhere serving you coffee and somewhere taking care of your kids and you taking care of your family. You wanted us to be relegated to a servitude position. And so I say no. It is not us who has betrayed the United States of America. It is the United States of America that has betrayed black people and the new Black Panther Party. Every party that you have, from the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, or any of your independent parties, so-called independent parties that you have, all of the parties that are represented here in America sprung up out of a dissatisfaction or sprung up out of some necessity or need of a constituency. We, the sons and daughters of Africa, the descendants of African slaves here in America, we have been here over 400 years and have not, at the very least, even received the original promise of 40 acres and a mule. I mean, really, 40 acres and a mule wouldn't even suffice today. But just on that wise, we, as a people and as a nation, for our forefathers and foremothers, free labor, hard labor, manual, physical labor, we have not received one dime, one piece of property, one piece of real estate, anything that we can parlay and build into an empire and build into a future the same way that the so-called Jews and their Holocaust did for their families, and the same way that other nationalities who have received repair and reparation have done for their families and their generations. The black man and black woman have received zero, and we have inherited the poverty of being slaves, so that when we were emancipated by Abraham Lincoln, old Abraham Lincoln, we were not emancipated into wealth. We were not emancipated into finance. We were not emancipated into equal economics. We were emancipated into survival. We were emancipated into capitalism. We were emancipated, but not free. Emancipation coming from a Latin root, emancipare, which means to let go from my physical control, but to maintain psychological control. To maintain physical control, but to hold on to the psychological or the mental control. So to answer that question straight up, no, we have not betrayed the United States. The United Snakes has betrayed black people and continues to betray black people to this day. We have fought in all of your major wars, frontline soldiers, and our people come back to this soil and receive none of the benefits promised and can't even in some places get a bite to eat right here in the soil that they fought your wars for. No, you have betrayed us. I'll read the next question here. They want to know, what is the uniform about? Okay. What is the new Black Panther Party uniform about? Now, for those who don't know what the new Black Panther Party uniform is, I'll do my best to describe it to you. Normally, when you see a member of the new Black Panther Party, you see us in one of two different uniforms, normally, generally. You will see us either in a beret, a black beret, with a black BDU outfit or military outfit, white Panther pin, a orange freedom or death patch with a panther coming out of it that says freedom or death on it, or you would see an Africa patch on the side of the arm with black combat boots, black socks, black T-shirt. That's one outfit. That's one uniform. That's a Class A uniform of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. Or you will see us in a black business suit, a black suit for the sisters as well. Sometimes a black suit, black shirt, black tie, black shoes, black socks, same. White and black Panther pin, or you can do the blue and black OG style Panther lapel pin. And those are the two uniforms that are detailed within the training of the new Black Panther Party. In recent times, you've seen some with a black Nehru collar with an inscribed NBPP on it. The sisters will also wear a black headdress covered down three-fifths. You might have a nice business skirt on or what have you, but it's always a classy presentation from the new Black Panther Party. Our uniforms, sir or ma'am, are to show the world a new black man and a new black woman. To show us first in our nation that we mean business. That we are not the coons and the buffoons that you see on the television. I'm talking about in entertainment. We are not the ones with mega-sized clocks on our necks. We are not the ones whose faces overly painted up in the sisters' cases with makeup looking like clowns. We are not the ones who are looking crazy and disheveled and looking raggedy, but that we look very much top class. We look very much high civilization. We look very much dignified and very much on top of ours and also very much African. And that we are also, in that same vein, very militant and very soldierly in our bearing. And so when you see us, sir or ma'am, you see us in what is called wardrobe. I'm going to say that again. Wardrobe. And so when we put on our uniforms, we put on our uniforms in the same fashion that the police puts his or her uniform on. The pig put their uniform on. Or the Navy commander puts his or her uniform on. Or the Marines put their uniform on. Or that even the person there at McDouble's, known as McDonald's, they put their uniform on. Everybody who wants to be identified has a uniform, and they have a uniform code of conduct. And so when you see us, you know that when you see that beret, when you see that Panther lapel pin, when you see that insignia that says freedom or death, that is over the heart of the warrior, male or female, you know that's a new Black Panther. And when the enemy sees that, they know that that black man or that black woman was not manufactured from their mentality. They know that that black man or that black woman has gone through a transformation or is undergoing a transformation and is undergoing a change and is a brother or sister that is intent on removing himself or herself from the slave mentality. When your oppressors see you in a militant stance and in a militant form, they know you mean business. Everything in nature, I'm going to say that again, everything in nature is in a military posture. When you look on the ground and see the ants are in a military posture. They're in a military formation. They're all there to serve one purpose and to secure their existence and to secure their nation, all to serve their queen, all to support their leadership, all to support the colony. That's what the ant does. The bee is no different. The bee, no matter what species of bee, leaves the hive, going to collect honey, going to collect pollen, going to collect that which is necessary for the survival of the beehive and to maintain the queen. Maintain the family, maintain the existence, and they go out in a soldierly fashion and a militant fashion, and they return in a soldierly fashion and a militant fashion. Now, to take it above the level of the bugs or the insects of the field, in your original history, brother and sister, we always had military. You hear us often quote many of our great black generals and black warriors. You hear often about Hannibal and others who were military geniuses. Don't talk to me about no General Schwarzkopf or any of these generals in the white man's cabinet now under Barack Obama's control. They study black militants. Their military comes from our root, which is Africa. We've always had militancy and militant posture. The only time our people have not had militant posture is when we came to the hills of North America and were robbed of self-knowledge. And when we were robbed of our self-knowledge, we were also robbed of our will and our ability to fight, our ability to defend, our ability to manufacture, our ability to protect and respect our queens. That's when we were robbed, when we were made slaves. And so when you see us in the new Black Panther Party, it looks weird to many because you have been robbed. You have been spoiled. You have been made other than yourself, and we are trying to return to ourselves, which is a militant posture, a soldierly bearing, a warrior and warrioress by nature who is here to defend and protect our nation and our people and preserve our existence. And so, as it is said, two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. You cannot, in one vein, promote black power and at the same time uphold the foundation and undergird the foundation of white supremacy. If you are never engaged in the battle to preserve yourself, your family, and your people, then you automatically, by default, are upholding the constitutions and laws and statutes and foundation and ideological pillars of white supremacy. And so you must, as a brother or sister who desires to be free, You must begin to tear down the idols and tear down the strongholds mentally first and ultimately physically, even in your own lives. Tear down the strongholds of white supremacy. And so we, brother or sister, have taken a vanguard stance, a vanguard position, which means that we've taken a forefront position, and so we are those who step out military first. We step out in our wardrobe first so that when you see us, you know, or you're supposed to know, them brothers and sisters are on my side. Them brothers and sisters represent me. Them brothers and sisters have my best interest at heart. But that when the devil, when the enemy, when the oppressor, when Satan, when those who whose minds and whose actions keep us in this condition see us, they are supposed to know that we make war with them, and we are here to make war with them every second of their existence on this planet Earth. Let me take a caller right now. 718-339, you're on the air with the New Black Panther Party. Your question, please, sir, or ma'am.
Hey, this is Khadija from Brooklyn, New York.
Hey, Khadija, peace.
Yeah, I'd like to say happy birthday to my son, Iborn God Allah.
Peace, and happy birthday anniversary. What's your question, sis?
Well, there's not really a question. What there is some observations. I was speaking to one of my sisters, Aisha, in Philadelphia. She said right on Black Power, you know,
Black Power.
And strength and unity and everything. But this is the thing. We are now entrepreneurs and organizers. We're writing books and all of that. So now we need to tap into some of that money from the Federal Reserve Bank, right? That's in New York, right? So now by us saying off the pigs and kill the Ku Klux Klan, they don't want to give us none of that money because the white supremacy, they still have the money. So in order for us to get some of that money, we got to negotiate the system. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, let me drop this on you.
Okay.
Let me drop, and then you go to the second point. In order to negotiate, Sister Khadija, you have to be able to negotiate from a position of power and a position of equality. And right now, in the position that our people are in, since we have been robbed of self-knowledge and self-determination, and we have not yet established ourselves as an independent nation.
Yeah,
when we come to the table, we come to the table unequal, and we come to the table without power and any true definition. And so before we even consider about negotiating, I would say monies from the Federal Reserve or through, as you said, white supremacists, we must first get our own act together, sister, and must first come to the table and be willing to come to the table from a position of power and authority instead of begging the white man for that which we can unite and do for ourselves. Go to your next point, sister.
Okay, let me just say one more thing. Now, they're shutting down hospitals and schools all over the United States of America. When are we going to just go ahead on and then take charge then? We are teachers. We are doctors, we are lawyers, and on and on and on. Why we got to wait and go to the bank and buy the building? Why don't we just go in those buildings, use our construction worker skills, go ahead on and take our drills, and just go ahead on and just make these entities work?
Well, that's happening right now. We're doing that through a Day of Action movement. I just left Brooklyn, New York over the weekend. I was there in Brooklyn.
Yeah, we got that St. Mary's Hospital. Big old hospital shut down. St. Vincent Hospital in Manhattan, big old hospital shut down. And we supposed to be going to the bank and say, look, we want it. We better take it over like the squatters is doing in these unaffordable houses, huh?
I was just there in Brooklyn, and we're organizing right there on the ground. Not so much with the enlightened community, but with the so-called street thugs. The street thugs are interested in taking the land and doing exactly what you're talking about, and we're putting it together. And so within the next few days, we'll have a drafted document out. I'm talking a few weeks, actually, but within a few weeks, we'll have a drafted document out on how the average individual can go into these properties, these unused properties, and make claim of the property, and there's nothing that the law or the oppressor, anybody can do, and that you and that they ultimately would have to, in some cases, even pay you because of what you've taken over. I don't want to give too much of the plan out
okay,
over the
yeah,
air.
Okay, yeah, let's just plan our work and work our plan, and plan, organize, and lead and control. Let's
but I would say, sister, that since you're there in New York, that
yes.
it would be good for you to organize with us on the ground in that action. And so you're going to have to get in touch with me. Do you have
okay.
my email or my Facebook?
I have your number and everything.
Okay.
I got everything.
Well then get in touch with me. Sometime, some point off of the air, it'd be good to just get in touch.
All right, we
have to build on what's happening on the ground. I'm just too trained to give all of our information out
yes,
over the
sir.
Air.
Yes, sir. You're right.
It's just not wise.
Okay.
But I would say to you that we do have things on the ground that are in motion right now that are hell bent on taking over the land and taking over actual property.
Okay. And happy born day again, our born God Allah. Okay.
That's,
thank you, sir.
Thank you, sister. Peace and black power to you.
Yes.
That's it to Khadijah. Let's go to the next caller here. The questions are still coming in, and they are still strong. And so we were talking about the uniforms. 504-235, you're on the air with the new Black Panther Party. Your question, please.
Black Power.
504-235, your mic is open. Your question, please.
Black Power, brother and sister.
Black Power,
hello.
Brother. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Go right ahead. You have
yes,
a question?
Well, my question is this here. You know, when will we stop all this ordering? We know, look, we got the roadmap. We have the plan. So what are we arguing about? I mean, you just can't just make this just like wave a magic wand and make these things happen. Half of us can't afford our light bill. So basically, we must. Activists must step back and do some research on how can we get this thing done. And I heard the sister arguing and stuff. It's not about a competition of what we can do, what we can't do. We know what we need to do, brother. Brother Quarry, we know what
yes,
we
sir.
Need to do. And I'm just saying that just talking about the reserve, nobody folks don't care about us, no Federal Reserve. They can care less about the black race. And so instead of we argue and fuss, the question is that there's someone with enough resources that can get us out of this situation. That should be the question, and it goes back to some of those who smile in our face every day.
This is
we
true.
Might
this
have
is,
them, buddy. Good, sir?
This is true. I don't necessarily mind an argument or an opposing viewpoint, brother. I don't mind it. I just mind it when it stifles our productivity. Here on Black Power Radio, this is a forum for questions or if a person has an opposition or opposing viewpoint, this is that forum. But when it comes to our everyday lives, activity, or our purpose, then that's when the arguments or the debates become counterproductive. And so I think that the sister was saying that, you know, we have to eventually come to the point to where we can get some major finance because this was a situation that even the Black Panthers of the 1960s faced was the lack of resources. Most of the militant organizations or the pro-black organizations faced an issue with financial backing.
Exactly.
So I understand where she's coming from with that.
But go
right ahead.
That's the first point I'm trying to make. Don't act like we don't know. We don't have anybody that. You know, don't act like we don't have any connections. Come on now. Some of us know mayor. No. Let's just cut through it. Some of us know people with money.
This is true.
Some of us do. I know. I got a friend of mine, Mark Moriel. He's over the Urban Leader Millionaire. We have people that we know we can pick up the phone and talk to. Who have money, but when we need people's faith, we're talking about something else. Look, won't you invest some of this money that you have into some of these programs that we're talking about, not talk about some political, go and vote for somebody for some political party, but won't you invest? That's what I'm saying. Go to those people that you know. You know some folk, Brother Sean, that got money, right? Come on now.
Definitely.
You know a few people
that
have a few dollars. Okay. Definitely. Let us go to these people, that's what I'm going to do, and say, look, this is the program. We need you to finance these programs.
That's absolutely correct. And,
you understand
and let the record, let the record reflect, Brother Sean has no problem in asking someone to support this program. Let that record reflect. But I understand your spirit, brother, and you're right, and we have to do more of it. And I think that now that our movement is in full motion, is in a good motion, we have the legs now to ask with more authority and more seriousness. And so we're right there with you, brother.
Let me just interject one more thing, if you don't mind. I know you got people waiting. Can I interject more thing?
Mm-hmm.
You don't mind, Brother Sean?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I want to go to New York City, okay? But I have the resources. I'm going to be honest with you. I have the resources. Now, I could have made an appeal to somebody on the street or on the air. If you can send me the money, I would have to fly. I'd drive to New York City and join this movement. But I felt kind of like shy to do it. I want everybody to know I'm a broke nigga. You understand what I'm saying? I ain't got no money.
Yes, sir.
But I'm just saying that, I'm just coming to let this cut through it. A lot of brothers and sisters couldn't come to New York City. Because why? They didn't have the finance to come there.
This is true.
I'm saying that if there's any, I know you probably ain't got it, Brother Sean. But I'm saying if there's anybody got some resources, some money in the bank, and want to fly me across the country and fight this struggle, I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? Anybody,
well, yes, yes.
I challenge anybody.
Well, yes, sir, brother, and the radio listening audience is
I
listening to
anybody.
You. We listening to you, and we feel you. I a closed mouth don't get fed, Reverend Brown. That's all I'm gonna tell you, brother.
I'm low on resources.
I understand.
Now, it's not gonna be that way always because I'm about to get into a $400,000 grant soon, but I can't just spend that money wildly.
Right. No, don't put your business out there. We with you. Don't put your business out there.
No.
Just understand.
I'm telling you, you know, it's on them. That thing is signed, sealed, and delivered. I'm telling you, brother,
sir.
It ain't nothing
sir.
Private, but it's public record. I'm telling you, when I get this grant, you understand what I'm saying? I'm going to go on the salary, and I'll be able to do some things, my own money. I'll be able to
yes,
do
sir.
Things I want to do. Right now,
well, you stay faithful.
With the right now, Brother Sean, the movement is being crippled because of a lack of resources.
Yes, but that is the ultimate aim. That is something that when you read and study books like William Cooper's Behold the Pale Horse, he tells you that in his branch of government that was a program designed to stop the Black Liberation Movement and those who would be active in their own liberation. He tells it in the book. He says it was designed to keep us so busy chasing the dollar and chasing the American dream and chasing after this illusion that we would never have time to really focus on our real freedoms. And so this is, as you look at the economy today, this is exactly what has happened. The same way that through COINTELPRO and through that whole Iran-Contra, that whole situation there, that they pumped drugs into the community to stop the Black Power movement. These are known facts. These are known facts. And so since we know it, we can't be reactionary to it, Reverend Brown. We're going to have to be proactive to it. Our people have struggled for a long time and have overcome much worse. And so we can't put a mental block on ourselves and say because we don't have physical money in our pocket that we won't have physical money or that we won't come across the resource. So we will, and
brother,
you will.
Last question, brother. You was at the rally in Harlem, I'm quite sure. What happened? I don't know. I can't even find an article on it. So just give me that brief and I'm finished. I'm not going to say nothing else.
The rally was a strong rally dedicated to promoting
hands off of Africa and the stopping of the bombing in Libya put on by the December 12th movement, a keynote speech given by Minister Louis Farrakhan. From all accounts and from what I saw, those that were there were in strong spirits and in strong support.
Okay.
And we those on the ground linked up, many exchanged numbers, exchanged contacts, and we're looking to work in cooperatives together in unity to build something that we can make something effective for Africa. And our national chairman, Dr. Shabazz, was able to speak and was able to let the people know about the Tijani Express that we'll be sending off on October the 1st, where we're sending approximately 4 tons of goods to Africa, right there in Senegal and some of the other requested areas to start with, to build and begin our international trade. And so what happened was we made a statement here in North America that when you attack Africa, which gave birth to mathematics, science, scholarship, chemistry, and everything else that this world functions on, you're attacking us. And so we sent a signal that we feel the pain of our people 9,000 miles away because we are that same people.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate
yes, sir.
It, and I'm sorry if I sound a little too upset because I know the money is there, but I appreciate you, brother. Just keep the good work.
Appreciate you, brother. You stay strong and keep the fight. And whenever you feel yourself getting down like that, you was a man that knew Dr. Khaled yourself. Pull that voice of Dr. Khaled up in your head and listen to what he would say to you. Black power, Reverend Brown.
Black power, brother.
All right. And so let's continue the questions. We're going to continue the questions. We don't want to lose no time. But we were dealing with the uniform of the new Black Panther Party, and so to sum that up, it is to show our seriousness. It is to show, you know, whatever you manifest on the outside should be a manifestation of what's on the inside. And so we are showing our people and our enemy that we mean business, that we are serious about the liberation and salvation of the Black nation. And any time that you see a revolutionary party anywhere in the world with any ethnicity, whatever it is, whenever you see revolutionary parties, they are always dressed in a revolutionary or a militant fashion. Next question here reads, are you still friends with King Samir? I think we covered that Monday night, but for the record, yes, Minister King Samir serves as our national field marshal of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. He has served a suspension for some internal policies that were infracted, served his time, and he has been reinstated into the new Black Panther Party in good standings, and he is doing a great work and growing every single day within the party. I think that it is a shame, and this is something that really happens in this society, especially when you look at the prison system and the industrial complex, the prison industrial complex, that this society is quick to throw away people who may make a mistake or make an infraction. This is not an African way. That is not an African tradition to throw away people who make a mistake or who do something which you feel like isn't right or is proven to not be right according to your policy. Minister King Samir Shabazz is a brother who right now has his own products, his own rap album that he has out. He's a brother that's working constantly with the youth and working to protect our elders and uplift the morale and the morality of the city of Philadelphia. He's constantly at the throats, metaphorically speaking, for the enemy listening. He's constantly at the throats of the Philadelphia Police Department. He's constantly on the ground working with the gangs and uplifting the young Black boys and young Black girls that are there that feel hopeless. Minister King Samir is doing a great work and is right now organizing a memorial. He's organizing what he called a pilgrimage, and it's a memorial to the grave sites of both Minister Malcolm X and the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. He's a dedicated freedom fighter, a dedicated warrior, and I would say that, you know, you can't tell people how to hurt. People express their pain, and their mistrust and their dissatisfaction in different ways. Some of you are able to handle it with more professional words, professional posture. You're able to deal with it. You know, in martial arts, we say with a parry. You know, you knock it, you knock the hatred or whatnot, the racism to the left. Others of you are not made to handle it like that. Others of you come at it brute. You come at it forcefully. You come at it harsh and hard. You come at it rugged. You give it in the manner that it was given. And Minister King Samir is one of those child of the slaves, one of those who, as he says, is a field Negro, that when he sees his people hurting, when he sees his people getting dogged out, when he sees us continually being mistreated by not only the former slave master, those who were brutal and took power over our minds and beings, but also their children today. Minister King Samir is one of them kind of brothers that wants to see justice for his people by any means necessary, and he does not intend to dress it up just so that people can say it sounded good. And so he is necessary. Minister King Samir Shabazz is just as necessary as Sean Kwali is, and however I say it, or Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. When you look at the United States military, once again, you have those, or even you can say even in your local police departments, you have those who serve as the diplomats on the local forces, those who serve as the spokesmen like myself, who express the hurt and the pain or the position and the situation as eloquently as best as they can without any injury or without anything harmful coming to that person or that particular program, position, or individual. Then you have those that may be in the force that are the armsmen. You have those that are the snipers. You have those that are the tactical units, those that come in that they're not there to talk and smooth it over, that they're there to get results. They're there to make it happen. They're there to follow instructions. They're there to carry out and cover down and ask questions later. And Minister King Samir Shabazz is the national field marshal. I want the world to hear this. For all of you who were going buck wild when he was there defending our people against white supremacist skinheads who dropped leaflets in a black area of Philadelphia, Minister King Samir Shabazz is a national field marshal, the national field marshal of the new Black Panther Party. And his job is to make sure that the new Black Panther Party in specific and the black nation in general is militarily or defense ready for that which we see coming to our doors. You heard early in the program Minister Huey Rose talk about how London, England is being torn apart. It's being torn down. You see how Egypt was torn down. You see how Tunisia tore down. You see what's happening in Libya. There's war all around the globe. And so you can't be so comfortable in your seat here in America that you think that war, like physical war, is not going to happen here on the shores of North America. There's already what they call a silent war going on. Even a generational war that's taking place, and a psychological and mental and spiritual war that's happening. So if a psychological, mental, and spiritual war is taking place, then it is only a matter of time through manifestation that the physical war will manifest and take place here in the hills of North America. And with the dissatisfaction of the United States population being the way that it is, of many different ethnicities, in specific black people, there is no way, as Minister Malcolm said, that this powder keg won't explode and that this boiling teapot won't boil over. And so when the teapot does boil over and when the powder keg does explode, we want you to be able to protect your family, to know what foods to store up and to know what to do when the electricity goes out, and to know how to purify your water, to have clean water to drink, and to know how to put on survival material, and to know how to use your firearms if necessary, to know how to build fires and to live in the wilderness, or to know how to make things happen, something happen from nothing. This is the job of Minister King Samir Shabazz and much, much more, and he's been doing a hell of a job, a great job, in the eyes of our national chairman, the National Central Committee, and the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Yes, and he's a growing individual. He's not the same Minister King Samir Shabazz that he was 1 year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. You can hear in his voice on Monday night, he's a growing individual. We have to give our brothers and our sisters and our people a chance to grow. What if the Honorable Elijah Muhammad never wrote back Minister Malcolm X? What if Minister Malcolm X just remained Detroit Red? What if he remained the pimp? What if he just remained a criminal? What if he just remained, you know, that street thug that was in the streets doing wrong? What if he just stayed like that? But no, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad took the time to teach Malcolm and to guide Malcolm and to grow Malcolm, and Malcolm began to study, and the talent that was buried inside of Malcolm came out, and it shined before the world. And we owe Minister King Samir Shabazz in specific, but every single young black male and black male and young black woman and black woman that same opportunity to grow and to exhibit the qualities and the divinity that has been implanted in them and in us since we were birthed in this world from God Almighty. And so, yes, not only are we friends with our National Field Marshal, Minister King Samir Shabazz, but we are comrades with Minister King Samir Shabazz. And, again, none of us are beyond reproach. If we make a mistake, we pull our brother or our sister's coattail, and we correct an error, we correct a mistake, and we keep on moving. But in terms of us being brothers and being sisters, we are that 110%. Next question. They ask, why don't you? Some of these questions are just silly, but we'll answer them. People, I guess, want to know, why don't you tell black men to pull their pants up and pay child support? I would say that whoever asked that question, you don't listen regularly to our national chairman, or you're not a regular listener to Black Power Radio. We consistently tell the black man in specific to pull your pants up, to look dignified, to look strong, to be a revolutionary, to go against the grain. We teach very much where the history of sagging your pants comes from. And we know the history of it coming out of the penal institutions, out of the penitentiaries. But it also came from an impoverished condition where some of our people in the inner cities were so poor that they bought their clothes too big. And that's all they had. And so the pants would sag. We talk about this all the time. And so I'm not going to be too harsh on my people like that on that instance. It just is what it is. Black man, it's best if you pull up your pants because nobody wants to see the crack of your behind. And let's go to the next question. Let's see here. Hold on 1 second. They asked the question, and we get this a lot. They asked the question, how large is your organization, and what is it all about? And they ask again, why are we wearing the uniform? Well, we answered the question about the uniform, and we will answer as best we can the question about the size of our organization. As the old saying goes, those that know don't say, and those that say don't know. The truthful answer is this, that the new Black Panther Party is every single black man and black woman under oppression in the hells of North America. as we would say in the 60s, a panther is born every 5 seconds in the ghetto. And so anytime that you are under white supremacy, under colonialism, under imperialism, under Zionism, under sexism and racism, you, as a resistor, if you resist the evils and the temptations and the wrongs of society, we classify you as a panther. When Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale adapted the panther from Lowndes County, Alabama, it was because of the nature of the panther, not because they were so in love with the animal. It was because of the nature of the panther. They related the nature of that panther, the characteristics of that panther, to the way that black people have reacted to the oppression that we're under and the oppression that we're in. And they noted that black people, under duress, as they say, or under oppression, we are peaceful people. We are a peaceful, righteous people by nature. And we don't harm anyone. We operate naturally underneath the laws of Maat, which is truth, justice, harmony, reciprocity, balance, and order. We operate naturally under that law, with that code, naturally. But that when you go to harm us, or that when you go to attack us, or when you go to mess with us, that we, when backed into a corner, will come out and attack and to defend and to preserve ourselves. And so this is why we chose the panther, or the panther was chosen. And so that's that. That's why we classify every single black man and black woman as panthers. Now, you have those who, as we say, that take the vanguard position, and those are those that are on the forefront. Those are those like myself, those who you see all the time. As we talked about the uniforms and those who are organizing on the ground movements to get our people the sparks of life, to get us going and get us pumping and raise up our spirits, those are called the vanguards. And so, but ultimately we are one nation, and so we are a whole nation full of black panthers. Put that down in your notebook for those of you who don't wish to see that. We are a nation full of black panthers, that we have people from the West Coast to the East Coast, from the North to the South, all the way in Canada, all the way in Australia, all the way in, as you heard earlier, London, England. We got people in South America, everywhere, people all over the globe. Last show, calling in from Toronto, Canada, talking about the panther. How can I be a panther? What can I do to get down and be a part of the movement? It's worldwide. It's worldwide. And so you can't narrow it down to any one specific number, because there are people that are popping up every day. Every single day, someone's calling, texting, emailing, leaving a message on how they can join this movement. And it will do nothing but continue to grow. If you devils want to stop the rise of the new Black Panther Party, then give justice to black people. If you really want to stop the rise of the new Black Panther Party, give justice to black people. If you gave justice to black people, there would be nothing for us to organize on. There would be nothing for us to push on. There would be nothing for us to mobilize on if we had justice. But since you continue to operate in an unjust fashion, since you continue to operate in the fashion that continues to keep us in a class society where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, then you continue to increase the dissatisfaction, and you continue to increase the resistance, and you continue to produce panthers. Let me go to the phone line here and take this call here. And let's go. Give us your best shot. 02-504. You're on the air with the new Black Panther Party. Your question, please.
Yes. I wanted to know, not why don't you teach men how to pull up their pants and be a man, but how can I help teach our men how to grow up and be men?
All right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Great question. It is our firm belief, ma'am, that it takes a man to teach a man. And it takes a woman to teach a woman how to be a woman. Now, I know that in most cases, we have the breakdown of the family unit, and we have the breakdown of our family structure. So in many cases, our women have had to play dual roles, or the woman has had to play dual roles and step into the place of the man and play also her role as the woman or the cornerstone of the household. We know this and I understand the situation, but in a holistic society, we would say that the man must teach a man how to be a man. And in the case of not having a male figure or a male influence, there we would say that you have to, as a woman, surround your male child around the best examples you can of manhood. In most cases, those of us as men, since we have not, in a lot of cases, since we don't have good father figures, or we don't have it there for us to immediately grasp, we end up in the street life, or we take our examples from television, or we take our examples from radio or music. And this is how many of us have grown up, being trained in our manhood, watching television or listening to the radio. But now we have to begin to put our children, our youth, around somebody positive. I'm going to say somebody positive. It could be an uncle, it could be a brother, it could be a preacher, an imam, a teacher, somebody in the neighborhood, positive. Somebody that, you know, is doing it as best as they can the right way. Somebody that has a good moral code, good moral values. Someone that is able to be a positive influence in the life of that young male, that young man. And also it goes for the young women as well. And that's the best I can tell you. It's about the influence and the environment. And if you can provide, as a woman, a positive influence, then that young man, he won't take the example of what he sees on television, or she won't take the example of what she sees on the radio, but she will take the example, or he will take the example of that in which he sees right around himself and right around herself. And so that's the answer. And also, study our national chairman. Study Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is a man who came up from Los Angeles, California, came up in the street life, and ultimately became an attorney at law. You can also take that example. There's examples out here, sister, ma'am, but we have to take the examples and do our best to surround our young boys and young girls around these examples. Is that sufficient? Ma'am, you still with me? Well, all right, we'll take it as we answered the question. But I would say still, let us make sure that we supply our youth with positive influence. All right, and let's go to another question here. It's a good, strong question here. They ask a question, do you have a personal relationship with Barack Obama? Okay, do we, I guess in specific, our national chairman and our organization, do we have a personal relationship with President Barack Hussein Obama? The immediate answer is no. We don't have a personal relationship with President Barack Obama. There was some confusion where a blogger, an independent writer, put up the emblem of our organization on the website, on one of the supporting websites of Mr. Barack Obama as he was campaigning, and the media went crazy with it as though that the New Black Panther Party was endorsing Barack Hussein Obama for his presidency over John McCain. For the record, the New Black Panther Party has never endorsed, publicly or officially, never officially endorsed President Barack Hussein Obama. We publicly praised him and wished him well during his campaign, being that we wanted, of course, to see a descendant of an African slave, a black man, do good and to represent a black family and to be strong in what he was doing. But we also, early in the outset, when some of the policies came out, certainly, especially the policies on Israel, our national chairman and us as a committee began to talk about his policies on Israel and said that President Barack Obama, or then the candidate Barack Hussein Obama, now president, that he had to get it right on Israel, that he had to get his policies correct on Israel. So we, from the outset, gave praise, and we, from the outset, gave our critiques, our initial critiques, but that we were careful. We wanted to be able to see what he was going to do. We didn't want to just jump at him right away or just to wantonly go at him for, you know, any kind of reason. We wanted to see, give him a chance. We wanted to give him a chance. And rest assured, we gave him a chance. And so anything that you hear us say now, it is based upon careful study, analyzation of his policies and his politics and politics, and it's an analyzation of the agenda that we see put forth before the people. We are here to serve our people. We're here to serve the people. And so anything that we see that is in that is a detriment to our people, and that is not good for the minds and hearts and the wills of our people, yes, we speak out about it and we organize on it. But to answer the question direct, no, we do not have a personal relationship with Barack Obama. And if we did, we never would have gotten in that kind of situation that we got in with the Justice Department. We were under the gun by the United States Justice Department with U.S. Marshals coming to our national chairman's house and other parental leaders' house and FBI visiting us and us having to keep these beasts up off of us and had to move the right way and do the right thing so that we could avoid casualty and avoid unnecessary incarceration on some trumped up, fixed up, mixed up charges that they tried to entrap us on that had no weight at all. And so, no, we don't have any personal relationship with him or really any of the cabinet. We are a revolutionary party that stands for truth, and if a person stands for truth, we back the truth, and if they stand on falsehood, we plan to destroy the falsehood. Let's see here. Question, how does one join? How does one join the new Black Panther Party? Can whites join? And will I be discriminated against if whites join? And can I buy the uniform? Okay, this is a question about can white people join the new Black Panther Party? The immediate answer is no. The new Black Panther Party is a party that is designed for the descendants of African slaves. It is designed for black people that are here in the hills of North America to deliver freedom for our people, to deliver employment for our people, to deliver tax exemption and decent housing for our people and shelter fit for human beings. We're designed to promote health care for our people, preventative and maintenance. We're here to organize and produce the ending of the trafficking of drugs and biological and chemical warfare. We're here to produce an education for our people, for black people, that exposes the true nature of this devilish and decadent American society. We're here to help our people and make our people exempt from military service. We're here to defend our people, black people, against police harassment, brutality, and murder. We're here to put an end to organize against black-on-black violence and snitching, cooperation, and collaboration with the oppressor. We're here to ensure the freedom of our people in the international, military, federal, state, county, and city jails and prisons. We're here to help our people to receive a fair trial when brought to court. And we're here as well to secure land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace, and freedom for our political prisoners. That is what our program entails and what it is. And so in everything that I'm naming to you, it does not allow room for us to deal with Caucasian people or to have Caucasian membership working on the black cause or the black liberation front. Not with us. That was tried in the 60s. It was tried in the 60s when the Black Panther Party would unite with what they called radical whites. They united with radical whites and some humanitarian organizations. And as it is taught, history is best qualified to reward a student his or her research. And so as it later came out that as these alliances would form, that when it got time to get down to the serious revolutionary business, when it got time to get down to confrontation as the police in Oakland and the police in San Fran and the police in Detroit and the police in Chicago and the police in New York and the police in Florida and the police down south in Atlanta and other, as they begin to assault Panther headquarters and they begin to attack Panther membership and attack Panther leadership, when it came time to defend what was ours and defend ourselves and to protect our claim and our right to nationhood and black power, that those radical alliances with those so-called radical whites begin to deteriorate, that many of those who were aligned with the Black Panther Party, they ultimately became enemies to us. They became snitches to us. They ultimately were not with us. They didn't roll with us. And so looking at history now, we have to be wise. We have to be wise. We have to be wise. We can't, just because you want us to be multicultural or just because you want us to have some kind of rainbow situation, go into this war blind to the facts. The fact of the matter is that majority of those who said that they were with us, I'm talking as a party, they let us down. They became infiltrators. They became agents. They were agents, snitches, and provocateurs. They wasn't down. And so why would we reorganize knowing COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, and knowing that history? Why would we reorganize on an all-black platform of black nationalism and black power and black ideology, some strong black coffee, and then let the white man who has been our 400-year-old oppressor into our organization? It's just like I said, dealing with coffee. If you put too much cream in that coffee, that which used to give you some bounce, that which used to give you some kind of spark, that which used to give you some kind of motion and motivation and some kind of energy even, if you put too much white cream in that all-black coffee, that which used to wake you up and pick you up now puts you down, now puts you to sleep. It now makes you doze. If you look at most of our black organizations today, most of them put our people to sleep. Most of them put us down. Most of them leave us in the condition that we're in because it's integrated. It's integrated. Pardon me. It's integrated. And they now are doing this at a rapid pace, this integration. And so we, as a new Black Panther Party, we are resolved to unify with our people. We don't believe in unification with everybody when there's no unity amongst ourselves. How can we, in our right minds, talk about uniting with anybody else? And we are the most divided, ununited, and miseducated people anywhere to be found in the world. No, brother and sister, when you come here, you got to know you're going to get you a strong drink of black coffee here. You're going to get you a strong drink of black history here. You're going to get you a strong drink of black self-esteem and self-determination here. You're going to get you a strong drink of black representation, uncompromising representation right here. Somebody has to be about us. There is nothing wrong with representing your own family, representing your own cause. And we got to have something of our own. Everything else is being taken from us. Our media taken from us. Our stores taken from us, lost. Our land taken from us, lost. Our minds even taken from us and lost. We have to have something and things of our own. And so, no, we don't now and don't ever, even in the immediate future, intend to integrate the new Black Panther Party with Caucasian people or people that are not descendants of African slaves. We have alliances with the oppressed people. We have alliances with the red man and the red woman who are living on reservations. Let me say the revolutionary red man and red woman. We have, in some instances, alliances with the brown man or the Latino. In some instances, the brown berets or the Zapatista, the revolutionaries. And in some instances, in very rare instances, maybe a yellow man here too, but you don't see much of that at all, if they're revolutionary. We have alliances with the oppressed peoples, the darker peoples of the planet Earth, the indigenous people, the melanated people. That's who our alliances are with. That's how our alliance, that's how and who our alliances are with. We don't have an alliance with the enemy of our people. Well, and some of you make this argument, you say, well, some of them, you know, this generation of whites or Caucasians have nothing to do with what their forefathers and foremothers have done. And so why wouldn't you unite with them? I have to say it to you in the same fashion and the same spirit that Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad taught it. When he taught it, he said, yes. He said, there are some in this present generation of whites who had nothing to do with the enslavement, had nothing to do with us being robbed mentally, robbed morally, robbed spiritually, robbed financially, robbed with our land base, just robbed, period. Had nothing to do with it. But the question becomes now, as he said, you have to ask, what are they doing? What are they doing to overthrow and overturn the white supremacist order? And the white supremacist, which when we say white supremacist, that means that the to where the Caucasian people will always remain on the top, will always be your boss on the job, will always be the first one hired, the last one fired. White supremacy, white privilege. What are they doing to stop this inequality in the world? Most of them aren't doing a damn thing. And then those that are supposedly trying to do something, it's like a drop in the bucket. It's like a drop in the bucket, so it has no effect at all. And then another portion of them just tell us they wish we would stop talking about it, and they accuse us of whining or complaining or revisiting the past and not living in the present. But this is not an argument made against the so-called Jewish people when they talk about Hitler and the Holocaust. This is not a claim made against the Italians when they talk about how they had to work and had to build up at points where they went poor and had to build up their own nation. This is not a claim made against any other nationality, even the old poor punk Polish. No other nationality is called whiners and complainers when they talk about their history or herstory, except the black man and black woman. Because in truth and in retrospect, our history of enslavement in America is like two pages out of a 1,000-page book. So if you got a 1,000-page book and slavery becomes two of your pages, then hell, you got all them other pages to read. 998 other pages to read. Okay? But as long as they keep us in that servitude condition and focused in the mindset of our servitude here in America, that we never even seek to read or to learn about what and who we were before we became and were made slaves. And so the process continues. The story and the plan and the methodology presented by Willie Lynch was presented to be a continuous cycle. A continuous cycle until, it says, a phenomenon occurred to break the cycle, and those who were once bickering over hair grade and once bickering over complexion of skin and once bickering over age and bickering over height and bickering over who lived on the hill and who lived under the hill, class status, that when that phenomenon occurred, or really that revolutionary action occurred to break the cycle, that they would unite, that they would come together on commonalities, that they would understand that they are all oppressed, that they're all in the same condition. No matter if you're a professional or if you're a thug on a street corner, you're in the same boat, in the same condition, because we don't enjoy true freedom. That's what they hoped wouldn't happen with the situation of Willie Lynch. And so this present generation of whites, although they may not have sowed the seeds, as it is written in the scripture, you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. Another scripture says that the sins of the fathers would be visited upon by the children. The sins of the fathers would be visited upon by the children. And so, yes, even though they did not sow the seeds, they are darn sure reaping the harvest. All the businesses that are flourishing today that were built on the back of my people, even though their forefathers and foremothers are not running those corporations, their children are running the corporations. And so there is no break in the cycle. They don't have to hang us from trees like they used to. They don't have to whip us with the cat of nine tails like they used to. They don't have to make us not say our African cultures and our African names like they used to, because that whole brutal practice has now become institutionalized. It is now institutionalized to where when you go to the grocery store even, when you go to the courthouse, when you go to the police department looking for justice, or when you go to any of these institutions, including the banks, to get money, white supremacy and that legacy left by their forefathers and foremothers is embedded in the institution, including the White House. And so they don't have to use the same old methods. Those methods would be considered outdated. That's what the whole Willie Lynch letter was about, to change the methods, because the African could run. The African was athletic. We are athletic in many cases in shape. And so that slave master was tired of having to chase all them brothers and sisters trying to get free. They was wearing the white slave master out trying to get free, and the white man couldn't keep up. And so they went to old Willie Lynch and tried to ask Willie to devise a method to where they wouldn't have to work so hard to keep us enslaved. And he divided us. He devised a methodology that divided us upon our differences, our texture of our hair, the complexion of our skin, the thickness of our nose, or the narrowness of our nose, the thinness of our lips, or the fullness of our lips, our age difference, where we live, and all these little nuances. Willie Lynch devised a methodology to divide us on, and that's exactly what we function on as a people today. You heard our brother talk about the arguments. That is exactly what we function on today. It is nuances and differences instead of commonality. And so these are the reasons why we will not and refuse to have white people in the new Black Panther Party. Hell, you have white people in your all-black organizations, black people begin to act funny. Black people begin to change. I don't care what it is. There's no way you can take the oppressor and the oppressed and put them in the same condition or the same room and one not act different. The oppressed will act different around the oppressor. The colonizer and the colonized, will not, they can't be themselves. They will act different. If you put in nature, if you put the predator and the prey together, the predator will always annihilate the prey. These are natural things that happen. And so we have to be amongst ourselves. We have to return amongst ourselves. We have to be able to converse amongst ourselves and unify amongst ourselves and deal amongst ourselves and find out who we are. So as I was saying to our sister, we can come to the table from not a position of servitude, but a position of power. And a position of real royalty and a position of real authority. And then we can talk some real trade. Then we can talk some real movement. Then we can talk some real building. But until we get ourselves together, hell no. We're talking about dealing with anybody else. And really even after the fact. But especially right now, hell no. The new Black Panther Party, you can rest assured, will not be one of these quote-unquote modernized organizations to where we're all inclusive of everybody. We're going to hold hands with everybody and run around in the field and eat grapes and roll around and swatch little white bunny rabbits float by the spring. That's not what we're going to do. We are completely dedicated to the liberation and salvation of our people. And so what I tell white folks who talk that talk about wanting to be a part of the new Black Panther Party, I tell them to start them a new White Panther Party. For the white folks listening, stop asking us to join the new Black Panther Party. We're not going to let you in. Join or organize a new White Panther Party. And what that means is, in the 60s, the Black Panthers had a movement that was coming up. They had a couple movements that were coming up. They had the Young Lords that were there. They came up. The Brown Berets came up. The Yellow Guard came up. And then they also had a White Panther Party where some white folks who felt like they were fed up with their own system. As the scriptures say, Satan casting out Satan. They were fed up with their own system, began a White Panther Party, and they said that their mission in life was to support everything that the Black Panther said, and they was going to give their all to make sure that the Black Panther program happened. And if that's the kind of action that you can give to this new generation of white folks, then you start you a new White Panther Party, predicated on supporting the principles and programs of the new Black Panther Party, and you go against white supremacy, and you talking some talk, and you talking some serious talk. Until you're doing that, we're not paying attention. It's not like we're gonna have an alliance. It's not an alliance thing. But if you're serious about revolution and complete constructive change, then that's what you do. Start your own new White Panther Party. And you wreak havoc on the white supremacy and the white institutions and your white forefathers and foremothers, and make our job easier. That'll be what that is. Let me get some of these other questions in here as we got a little more time to do it. We appreciate you all for taking all this in. We hope that we are servicing you and that you're learning about us. And then we try our best. We know we can't get it all to you over in one night, but we're trying our best to get it to you. Let's see here. They asked, what kind of things do we do to get our message across? What kind of things do we do to get our message across and to get our message out? We, brothers and sisters, we work to get our message out by any means necessary. Obviously, one of our number one mediums is the radio show that you're on now. Black Power Radio. We use this radio broadcast for instruction, for information, and inspiration. For instruction, information, and inspiration. And so, obviously, our radio broadcast. every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Also, our newspaper, the New Black Panther newspaper. We definitely have to keep the New Black Panther paper out, and we're looking for writers. If you are a writer and you can write on the black issue and black issues, and you can talk about things that are relevant to our struggle and our desire for freedom here in the hells of North America, we need you ASAP, as bad as we need running water and air to breathe. We need writers. We need artists, graphic designers, those that can draw and those that can put some graphics together on the computer. We need you. We need those that are willing to form a staff so that we can consistently keep our paper out before the world and before our people, so that we can constantly inform our people and educate our people and motivate our people and constantly keep that propaganda at bay with some true proper propaganda, so that we can begin to offset the enemy's media and fight our enemy on an informational front. Fight him on an informational front, since this is the information age. We don't want to let the Panther Party of the 60s down. I don't care what was going on. I don't care if Minister Huey P. Newton was being locked behind bars, or Bobby Seale was locked behind bars, or Eldridge Cleaver, or Elaine Brown, or any of them. That paper came out. That paper came out. And so we, behind the scenes, are now doing our best to measure up and to organize a paper staff in such a way to where we want to, same as the Final Call does, same as even the Muhammad Speaks does, same as the Amsterdam News does, we want our paper to come out regularly so that our people don't have to ask what's going on with the New Black Panther Party, but that you can go down to the local barbershop, that you can go down to your local hair salon, you can go down to the local corner store, you can go to the newsstands in some cities, or you can come to the chapter, meeting, the local meeting of the New Black Panther Party hosted in your city, and you can see New Black Panther newspapers sprawled all around the table, all around the room, people walking out of the room with New Black Panther newspapers under their arms. This is the vision, and this is what will take place. And so if you're a writer, if you are excited about writing and it's a passion of yours, if you're a graphic designer, or you just feel like in general that you can contribute to the New Black Panther newspaper, then it's best that you email us at nbpphq@yahoo.com and leave your name and your contact, and the staff will get back with you and line you up and help you to get your ideas and your writings and your vision into our paper, so that we can feed our people some positive information and some positive inspiration. As the woman called earlier about having her young male, her male child around positive role models and pulling their pants up, this is what we need. This is what has to and must take place. We must begin to put positive information out to the world. Right now, on a daily and consistent basis, there is continuous negative information that is placed in our minds, our brains, and our subconscious, and we must begin to beat it back. Let me take a call here and get your question in. Caller 323-683, you're on the air with the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Your question, please. 323-863, your mic is open. Your question, please. Okay, maybe you can put your hand back up. They wasn't ready. But again, nbpphq@yahoo.com. That will get you in to working with our newspaper. If you have newspaper experience, we want to recruit you. We want to use you. We want you to use your talent to talk to the world, to get the real truth out. As you heard our brother Huey Rose from London, England, telling you that we're not getting the real truth on what's taking place on the ground in London, England. We want to be able to give you the truth every week. I'm talking about the real hard-hitting, actual fact, truth on what's really taking place in the political arena, what's really taking place in the financial arena, what's really happening in the spiritual arena. We want to be able to talk to you right there in your homes through our number one minister and teacher, the new Black Panther newspaper. So you all make sure that you email us. And we get our message out by any means at all. We do, like I say, radio. We do television. But more importantly, before we do all of that, we're in the community. We do rallies on the corner. We're walking through the projects. We're at the train station. We're there at the subway. We're there. Wherever our people can be found, if we got to go to the church, if we got to go to the mosque, if we got to go to the temple, if we got to go to the damn cemetery, that's where we got to go. Wherever we have to go to deliver this message that the black man and the black woman are the original people and the original owners of this planet and rulers and governors of this planet, and that we have a place in the sun and things to do to get back on top of civilization, that's what we got to do. That's where we go, however we can. As you said, by any means necessary, that's what we do. If you have an idea on how we can get this message out further, email us at the same email address. Or hit me up on Facebook, Sean Quali, K-W-E-L-I, last name, and give us the ideas. We're always looking to expand. We're always looking to improve, always looking to do better, always looking to represent our people in the best fashion, in the most complete fashion. And so we need all of the ideas that you could possibly give. Let me go to the next question here with these last few remaining minutes, and we really appreciate you listening to us and taking this all in. Hope you're taking notes, as we're going to be digging harder and harder into the truth as these weeks go on. Let's see. They ask, does our controversies add fuel to the fire with the Tea Party? Okay, does our controversies add fuel to the fire with the Tea Party? I don't think that it's our controversies that add fire to the Tea Party. I think it is the Tea Party's own overt and covert racism that adds fuel to its own fire. This is a party that has signs out there, like, for example, it says, you know, to Obama, representing the black man, well, we didn't bring our guns this time. That, you know, Obama's, I saw one sign that said, Obama's plan equals death, and just all kind of crazy manners that they would not do if George Bush was in office. I see, I'm talking about principle here. They just do some crazy things that they would not do if a white face was in office. Some of these parties and some of these people out here that you see on the media, they're going buck wild just on the fact that a black man is in the White House. It has nothing to do with his policy. Has nothing to do with his position, has nothing to do with something he may have said in a speech. They're going buck wild crazy just over the fact that a black man, a black skinned man, has the audacity and the nerve to even aspire to be in the White House, to even aspire to be something more than a rapper or an entertainer or a basketball player, an athlete. The nerve they feel of him to do this, and so they attack it. They attack it any kind of way they can. If you remember, when Obama first came out, he was talking about giving people health care. It was just a big old health care bill he was trying to put out. And by the time his bill hit the Congress, hit the Senate, by the time it hit the Senate, it was so ripped to shreds, it didn't even look like the original bill that he initially proposed. And he had to do so much buck dancing. He had to do so much kowtowing just to even get a smidgen of the bill out that it was almost as if he didn't even propose a health care bill at all. He didn't even have nothing to stand on. They had cut the legs out from under him. Because, as I said a couple of questions back, that white supremacy is embedded deep in the White House. White supremacy is embedded deep in the Senate. White supremacy is embedded deep in the Congress. And so if this black man proposes a bill which they immediately call socialism that would give health care to its American citizens, then even if the bill is good for the people, and even if the bill is righteous for the people, they're going to clip the legs out from underneath it for the simple fact that he's a black man. For the simple fact. And so, no, it's not our controversies adding fuel to the fire for the Tea Party. The Tea Party's own racism adds fuel to itself. The Tea Party is a racist movement and a racist organization. It is a racist movement and a racist organization. It is not a legitimate organization. It is backed by 2 million millionaire, some say billionaire financiers, where their whole agenda is to control the political arena. I'm not even going to call them out on this show. I'm going to call them out on another show. But they're two white multi-million dollar financiers who failed in politics. And so since they failed in politics with their old weak party position they had, they organized little front groups like the Tea Party to push their agenda through the Tea Party, which ultimately represents white supremacy, and that they don't want to see people like ourselves rise to the top. These are actual facts. It's not a conspiracy theory. You can look it up. I'm just not going to call their names right now. We don't have enough time. I will take a specific show and deal with the Tea Party. Taxed enough already. I call them the Flea Party. The Tea Party and the Tea Party movement. Rand Paul and all of them beast. All of them beast. They're a racist movement. Masquerading like a just movement. Like a grassroots movement. And you are backed by two racist financiers who are brothers. And y'all that know, you know what I'm talking about. And we're going to pull the cover up off of you. You better chill out. I know the Tea Party for a minute was talking about messing with some Muslims down in Mississippi. You were going to run up and do some stuff to some Muslims in Mississippi and some Muslims of the Nation of Islam underneath Minister Farrakhan's leadership. You're going to mess with them. And we told you all that if you brung yourselves down there to Mississippi, we were going to black boot stomp a mud hole in your behinds. Now, enough said on that. The Tea Party is a racist movement. It has its own fire fueled by its own racism, and the Tea Party will be exposed. Needs to be exposed and will be exposed. Some of you, our own people, are so silly that you go join the Tea Party, but you run away from the New Black Panther Party. You run away from the New Black Panther Party in hopes that you're running away from something that you have bought from the white man and believe is racist, and you run to the Tea Party, and the Tea Party is built and founded on racism, backed and financed by two racists. So, no. But, hell, the Tea Party will be exposed and needs to be shut down. Next question they ask, what is it that the NBPP stands for? I think we covered it pretty good, but the NBPP stands for Black Power for Black People, the empowerment of black people, the empowerment of our communities, self-determination, freedom and control in our community. That's what we stand for. We stand for the freedom, justice and equality of the black nation, self-determination and self-control of our communities. We stand for the unity of our communities, and we stand to build a black united front amongst our people. We are black. We are revolutionary black nationalists. I'll explain that. And we are revolutionary Pan-Africanists. Revolutionary black nationalists means that we are determined to control the land in which we operate in, where we live, our communities. It means that we are determined to control our own economics. It means we are determined to control our own schools. determined to control our own politics and politicians. If you don't understand what black nationalism means, you should go to YouTube after this show and type in Malcolm X on black nationalism. Minister Malcolm X gave a beautiful explanation on what black nationalism is and on how black nationalism stops the religious community from arguing, the black religious community. If you would embrace black nationalism, you wouldn't argue amongst yourselves in terms of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism or Hebrews. You wouldn't argue amongst yourselves in terms of Moore Science Temple and Moore Science Temple of America. You wouldn't argue amongst yourselves in any of these spiritual circles, whether Buddhism or Confucianism or what have you. You wouldn't even argue if you would embrace black nationalism, because black nationalism requires that you put your spirituality to your heart, and that you don't just speak your spirituality, but that you work your spirituality. And see, if you work your spirituality, that means that we're working for a common goal in a common struggle, so that the revolutionary Christian, the revolutionary Muslim, the revolutionary Buddhist, the revolutionary Confucianist, the revolutionary Hebrew, and even in some cases the revolutionary agnostic, that they all can work together for the same common cause, because they understand that the same rabid dog or the same oppression that one faced, the other face. Go to YouTube after this show and type in Malcolm X on black nationalism and get a full understanding. Get a full understanding of what black nationalism is. And then go and type in Kwame Ture, T-U-R-E, Kwame Ture, on Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism is the understanding that wherever you see one, you see the other, meaning that if you have a black man or black woman that lives in France, or a black man or black woman that lives in Africa, a black man or black woman that lives in China or Mexico or the United States, North America, South America, or Canada, or the Isle of the Pacific, or Europe, the UK, or what have you, that we are all one family, Pan-Africans. We're one family, one nation, just scattered abroad around the country. Our nation is the strongest nation, and so our enemy had to divide us. Public Enemy said it was called the fear of a black planet. Imagine yourself as a Caucasian individual, Caucasian trying to rule over the darker peoples of the planet Earth, red or black, brown, red, and yellow people. You have no melanin. All these people got melanin, and you're trying to dominate them and impose your will and your spirituality and customs on them and subjugate them. How would you do it? You would have to begin to divide that people amongst themselves, kind of the same way that you cut a cake or cut a pie into slices. Instead of it being a whole cake or a whole pie, if you cut it in slices, you make singulars. You make it, you know, you make it into one, or you make it separate from the whole. And that's the same way that our nation, as melanated people, same thing has happened to us, as black people and Africans especially. We have been divided. We have been cut into fractions, where those that consider themselves French, and those that consider themselves Haitian, and those that consider themselves Creole, and those that consider themselves so-called Americans here, and those that consider themselves, you know, whatever, from Barbados, and, you know, those who consider themselves from Haiti and other areas. And, you know, we're all divided because of these labels that were imposed on us and put on us. But they are not our true labels. Our true label is the original people of the planet, the aboriginal people, the indigenous people of this planet. We were the first people here. And if there is a such thing as the last, we'll be the last people here. Long before there ever was a Caucasian or a European, as you say, there was the black man, there was the black woman. Long before they ever crawled themselves up out of the caves and hillsides of Europe, or they ever even began to cause mischief and make trouble amongst our original righteous lands, there were black men and black women that ruled and governed and ordered this planet and ordered our continent, really even was in connect with the cosmos and the universe. This is, we're talking thousands of years before the first white man and white woman was ever even produced on the planet, ever even appeared on the planet. Thousands of years we ruled and had civilizations and existed in order and harmony and peace and prosperity. We were builders and movers and shakers long before you had to go to the white man's college to get a diploma and a certificate to learn how to do something for yourself. All they do in these colleges is reteach you and reteach me that which their forefathers and foremothers stole out of our libraries, out of our people's libraries, all of their artifacts that you see in their museums. They stole them out of our people's sarcophaguses and tombs and our structures and our sacred buildings. They stole that stuff. They stole it. They would take our forefathers and foremothers and display them out and put them in glass cases. Now, can you imagine yourself going to Ireland or somewhere or going to Italy somewhere and digging up their transcended relatives and putting them in a glass case somewhere? Can you imagine that? Just even the mind to do that. But that's what they did to us, and that's what they do to our great ones. That's what they did to our family, and they stole our information, and then they give it back to you, whitewashed, rewritten, and then they charge you for it. And all they're doing is reteaching you what your forefathers and foremothers already knew and already gave for free through example to the world. This is the way that it's set up. And so here we have a lot of work to do at the end of the day. That's what I'm saying. We got a lot of work to do, but that's what the NBPP stands for. The NBPP stands for a Sankofa, which means going back to your original self, going back home to your original purpose. And when I say go back, I'm talking mental. Go back home in your mind to who you were and what you were doing before your mind was interrupted by an enemy who deceived you to your true knowledge. That's what we're a party that represents. We're revolutionary black nationalists, revolutionary pan-Africanists. We're about the unity of our people. And our mantra and our motto is freedom or death. It's freedom or death. If we can't be free, then hell, that means that which opposes us must die. That which opposes us must die on all levels, spiritual, mental, physical, and moral. Let me try to get another question here, another couple questions, and we'll close it out for the night. Let me see. I gotta go down here. They asked this question. I like this question here. They ask, what are the weapons used to free black people, legal, spiritual, and physical? What weapons are used to free black people? Well, first and foremost is what you're hearing now, sir or ma'am. It's information. It's first information. Since we were first robbed from information, we have to return the true information that was taken from you. That's number one. All of our stories and all of our customs that were stolen, we have to return our stories, our true stories. I ain't talking about that which you're reading in some King James Version, no disrespect, or that which you're reading about in some old whitewashed version of the Quran, no disrespect. I'm talking about our original stories so that we can know who we was before we came across the white supremacy. Our original customs, our originalities. We got to give you the original information first, and then we reacquaint you with your original self. Original customs, spirituality, your original self, your original warrior spirit. Every black man and black woman who's alive is a natural warrior. You're a natural freedom fighter and a natural warrior for your people. That's natural. We look at Shaka Zulu and these others, and we think that that's just one or two. No, we have nations of people like that. Queen Hatshepsut, we have nations of sisters like that. And they're still here. I mean, we're marveling today at Venus and Serena Williams, the way that they hit the ball. These sisters came up out of, I think, Compton, California. You know what I mean? They came up out the so-called ghettos. Ghetto really is a Jewish term. We don't really live in ghettos. But I'm just saying it for conversation's sake that, You know, they came up out of impoverished areas. We've always had great ones amongst our people and amongst ourselves. And so the weapons used first is an informational weapon. Since we are we're in an information age, an information time, and we're fighting a propaganda war. Since we were confused about ourselves through an informational means, we have to be restored through an informational means. But that's not to discount our spiritualities. We believe that anyone who practices any kind of spirituality should practice that spirituality based upon their own black perspective, their own life perspective. You shouldn't be looking in the mirror for a deity or a creator and see the face of your oppressor and your enemy. You shouldn't see a manufactured copy of that in which those who have robbed you and tricked you said your deity is. When you lay down to say your prayers or your meditations, you should understand that your deity puts you in tune with your forefathers and foremothers because all are connected. It should be one common connection, one common line. It should be one straight line and connection to the cosmos, to yourself, and to your family, and to this planet. We're all connected as a family. If you break that connection and you see an outsider as your deity, something that's been given to you, no, that's not the right deity. And so it's information. It's a spiritual revolution. And then it is also physical revolution. Revolution means complete constructive change. Completed constructive change. That means that whatever starts from the top goes right back down to the bottom, back to the top. And so if you ruled in a 3-6, if you ruled at one point and you're now not in a ruling position, 360 degrees means you rule again. A revolution, a complete turn. But we say complete constructive change, complete constructive turn. So that where you will rule again, black man and black woman, or your children's children, or my children's children even, if necessary, will rule again, but that we won't fall, and we won't fall victim the way that we fell victim centuries and centuries ago, that we will finally learn the lesson and stop being so friendly and protect that which is ours and protect that which is precious to us. And the most important is to protect our women and our children, but to also protect our resources and our minds. And so we're here. We're standing for our people, fighting with the information, fighting with our spiritualities, and fighting with our God and our gun. We believe 100% that you must have physical defense for your home and your person. For your home and your person. If you are under attack, it doesn't do any good to be getting punched in the mouth and start to sing, "We shall overcome." If someone is kicking you in your behind, someone is trying to break your arm, it doesn't do any good to light a candle and say, "I'm going to have a prayer session or have a visual." No. When you are under an attack, it is important during an attack that you mount up an equal or overwhelming counteroffensive against your attack. That is the way that you declare and that you show you're in tune with how to defend yourself and that you're in tune with how to role in this society, because as it is said, as my brother said earlier, if you're dealing with a brute beast, and that's in whatever skin complexion, if you're dealing with a brute beast, then trying to charm the snake or talk the snake out of your situation is not really going to work. Sometimes, if you're lucky, it may work, but if someone is intent on harming you, you have to know how to defend yourself. Well, we have been in a condition now for over four centuries. And obviously that if our singing and our chanting and our marching was going to just get it, we would have been free. No, sir, no, ma'am. Ultimately, we're going to have to come to a point to where enough is enough, like our brothers and sisters in the UK and our brothers and sisters in Africa and our brothers and sisters in South America. We're going to have to come to a point in America where we're uncomfortable with the conditions of our community, with the savagery of our community, with the insane thinking of our community, with the uncivilization of the community, with the lack of manufacturing productivity in our communities, with the lack of positive information and inspiration in our community. We have to come to a point to where we can't take it and we move to make a difference. We're not type to make a difference or talk to make a difference or sing to make a difference. All that is respected, but at a certain point, it will get physical, as we are being physically assassinated through many of the police departments across the country. Sean Bell was no accident. Oscar Grant, no accident. Others, no accident. They have been given the green light to assassinate on sight, as they feel like they are eliminating the problem before the problem gets to take off, or eliminating the potential or new rulership, new leadership, before we get to sprout and spread our wings. And this government organized to move on the black leadership and the black light that were in our dark communities. We must come to a point where we say we must protect our leaders and protect our children and protect our babies and protect our women and protect ourselves, and get to the point to where if it means that when somebody violates the bounds of the law and somebody violates the bounds of your person and tries to take their hatred of you and their racism on you to take your life, that you defend yourself, even if that means taking the life of your attacker and those who try to harm and take your life. That's what it's coming to, and that's what it is, and that's what revolution is all about. Complete constructive change, no compromise, no let up, no back down, no slow down, no slow up, but that you, yourself, your powerful self, that you determine in your mind, you determine in your heart that you will make a difference regardless of what the odds are. And that's what I like about this present generation, the ruthlessness and the courage of this present generation. They don't care nothing about no odds. They don't care nothing about no overwhelming situation. They want some action, and they want to see some change. And so, brothers and sisters, we are out of time. But we ask that you join us again next time, this Saturday, for another edition of Black Power Radio, as we will continue to bring you information and inspiration and kick this program to you to liberate our people. NVPPHQ@yahoo.com. Get in touch with us or contact me on Facebook, Sean Kwali, Black Power.